Welcome everyone to a Tuesday edition of the Damage Report. We've zoomed in more. I guess the shot has changed. Welcome. I'm glad you guys are here. I notice things sometimes, you guys. It's been a minute since I've seen you guys. I had a bit of a cold to get over, which I think you can probably tell is still hanging around somewhere. I got a 2-year-old Ford Bronco that is in the shop right now. Oh, Jackson is joining me today. I want to talk to you about this. So let's go ahead and formally introduce Jackson White. Joins me. He's Politics and Paper is his channel over on YouTube, making things happen, entertainment, also politics, also smart guy stuff. He's also doing some activism to change our world, not just bitch and complain about it. What's going on, Jackson? How you feeling?
I'm doing good. You know, actually this morning I was thinking like, okay, I talked to Rayvana earlier, so I know she gonna be on Indisputable today, so she probably ain't doing this. Maybe I'll be on with Francesca, I don't know, because that's who I was on with before. And I was like, oh, and then I seen you, minus the dreads though, because you know, we came a little ways since that, you know, that ordeal.
But I've aged out.
We good to go. This may be even better because now it's a Jackson and Jackson Tuesday.
We're back to Jackson, but on a Tuesday. What, I don't even remember what day it was regularly before. Maybe it was Tuesday.
It was Thursdays, and then it was Wednesdays, but then no, it was every other Thursday. You know what I mean? And you can't just make it happen.
You can't keep the combination down. By the way, I'm gonna finish really fast about that story. I have 2-year-old Bronco. The car wouldn't start Sunday night. Also wouldn't start Monday morning. All day yesterday, I was running around trying to get this thing somewhere and somehow taken care of. Would not start. I have a 1984 Corvette that will start. I'm just gonna point that out. Let's go ahead and get started. There's a lot going on today.
At least one of them will start. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, I got other things taken off of the Corvette because I'm working on turning that into an absolute beast. But still.
Right.
Lots going on in the political world. Trump's doing his thing. Also, we've got some folks that are suing doctors that were that actually came into the limelight when it came to things with the abortion debate. That big story from Indiana. The world is upside down, and people think up is down and down is up. We're gonna get into all that. Can't wait to see your thoughts on this. So also, you guys like, subscribe, also share the stream. Let everybody know what's happening over here at the Damage Report. It's John Still. Is Big Daddy hanging out at home with the brand new baby. Just update on our interactions with John. He did text me last night, and I think you guys can maybe understand what it was about. It was Monday night. There's a WWE event. Yes, we're still talking wrestling for all you guys out there that like it. Let's get started on things you guys actually do care about. Let's jump straight into this with Donald Trump and his legal, well, political legal issues. So we've been asking ourselves a lot, what's been going on with Donald Trump's classified documents? It's just one of those other cases that he's facing outside of all the other criminal charges, but those hiding of documents, more information is coming out. We had a previous employee that spoke about how he told him where to hide it and how to hide it and don't tell anyone this. There's another employee with more information too, because there was to-do lists that were given to this employee on classified documents. Let's get into the details from ABC News. This aide to Donald Trump, her name is Molly Michael. She told investigators that more than once, she received requests or taskings from Trump that were written on the back of note cards. And she later recognized those note cards as sensitive White House materials with visible classification markings. And as ABC News previously reported though, Molly Michael is believed to be the person identified in special counsel Jack Smith's indictment as quote, Trump employee number two. That's where she was described in an indictment as someone who handled many of Trump's White House era boxes at Mar-a-Lago and who provided Trump with photos of those boxes that were then included in the indictment. The note cards that they were talking about with classification markings were at Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate when FBI agents searched the property on August 8th of last year, but the materials were not taken by the FBI, according to sources familiar with what Michael told investigators. Again, Molly Michael, she wasn't at Mar-a-Lago when they were searching though, looking for those documents, trying to figure out what was going on. And when he lied to folks, told his other spokesperson, we gave you everything. She wasn't there. And then when she showed back up, she noticed something there. She told fellow investigators that last year, she grew increasingly concerned with how Trump handled recurring requests from the National Archives for the return of all government documents being kept in boxes at Mar-a-Lago. And she felt that Trump's claims about it at the time would be easy to disprove. Sources said that after Trump heard the FBI wanted to interview Michael last year, Trump then went to Molly Michael and told her, you don't know anything about the boxes.
He's such a stupid little boy. He's such a dumb little kid. It's just like, you know, classified documents. Let's just, you know, scribble on them. And here's some instructions. Like, he's just so, he can't help himself. Like, everything he does is just completely ridiculous.
What hasn't been reported, Jackson, is that on back one of those note cards, it said Big Mac, large fries, and extra ketchup.
Yeah, exactly. That literally would be the perfect thing that he would write.
Just so you don't forget it, I'm gonna write it really big and in red crayon.
This guy, think about, okay, you say anyone who works in an office. Maybe run out of some copy paper. Maybe the post-its have all run down. Maybe the note cards are all done. Whatever it is you write on to note take, you're running low. So you grab the most important documents that's nearby in your entire office. Maybe some bills. Maybe something with somebody's social security number on it. Maybe with the address that you don't want getting out there. You're gonna use those documents to write something on the backup to hand to some aide to go and do some kind of tasking or anything that she was talking about.
Just painted like a scenario, like he's rummaging through everything and he's like, oh, I know these.
Where did he get it
this
from?
This is what I'll pick, right?
Exactly. If it's that casual of an atmosphere, where you're handing off documents like this to someone for tasks and things like that, what else was he using them for? Coasters, bookmarks, who knows? Well, it wasn't bookmarks, this fool does not read.
Right, exactly.
But still, on top of that, Judge Cannon did, as ironically, this whole thing, the judge that was overseeing this whole case, she did impose this order, as NBC News pointed out, this order that would prevent Trump from publicly discussing any evidence that was marked as classified. So I guess he wouldn't discuss it, but he was definitely handing it out to folks to just look at on accident when they flip it back over. So this is just another, I think, potential nail in the coffin for Trump from folks who saw, experienced, and were told directly by him from his face to their ears. Again, he said, you don't know anything about the boxes. My kid's in middle school now. He probably has some friend that may get in some trouble, like, you don't know anything about that gum that I stuck under the table in math class. That's the kind of thing that we think about when it comes to that. But this is the former president of the United States who thinks classified documents have this level of casual usage for them. So imagine everything else that could happen. Let's go to another aspect of this for, because as Donald Trump has been dealing with these things, he's still dominating the polls. Yes, Donald Trump, after having more information coming out about his classified documents case, the other cases that he's also dealing with, he's still leading in the polls, and maybe he's on to something here. ABC News points out that Donald Trump is expected to skip the second Republican primary debate in California on September 27th, and he'll instead visit Detroit to deliver a speech in front of union workers amid a major auto strike. That's according to a senior advisor. So of course, real quick, this is really easy. Even Joe Biden jumped on this, and he actually had some more colorful words. I'm not sure if he specifically wrote this, but this is the Biden campaign statement. Donald Trump is going to Michigan next week to lie to Michigan workers and pretend he didn't spend his entire failed presidency selling them out at every turn. Instead of standing with workers, Trump cut taxes for the super wealthy while auto companies shuttered their doors and shipped American jobs overseas. He's said he would have let auto companies go bankrupt, devastating the industry and upending millions of lives. That's why Trump lost Michigan in 2020 and his MAGA friends further decimated the Michigan Republican Party and cost them 2022. No self-serving photo op can erase Trump's 4 years of abandoning union workers and standing with his ultra rich friends. Jackson, it's a statement that I think is pretty clear, but I wonder, I mean, I don't read every statement that comes out of the Biden campaign. And maybe there's the Biden campaign versus the Biden administration who doesn't come out as hard hitting to talk specifically. This guy will travel the country. He'll go to Tennessee, go to Texas, go to Michigan, thinking these are areas where he can get some kind of support. But if people point out, instead of just saying, yo, you know what he's done with these indictments, we're seeing that, and they actually celebrate that. But when you talk about how he's screwing over the people that he's going to say he's standing for, maybe they'll start listening to him closer and understanding things that he said before. I don't know if it's a tactic that'll work, but it has to be something. What's your thoughts before we get to his debate debacles?
Well, I think that at the end of the day, Donald Trump, you know, he's going to the rally to skip the debates and everything, like, you know, we're about to get to. But I think at the end of the day, what he's going to do is he's going to go down there and he'll say, you know, vote for me, I'll make you rich. And then he'll be crooked Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, I won the election in 2020. You know what I'm saying? The Rhino Republican Party, they don't want me back in office. Like, that's what he's going to do. And at the end of the day, the United Auto Workers want something legitimate. You know, like, they're not a bunch of idiots. So whoever's going to be at that rally will probably be whatever Republicans are going to be at that rally regardless. Mm-hmm. So in order for him to really get new people, he would have to really speak to them, which he could, but I don't think he will, because what's really on his mind is not going back to, well, not back to, but not going to prison. That's really what's on the forefront of his entire brain right now. So You know, again, if he goes there and says, look, this is what I'm going to do for you guys, that, yeah, that could make a difference. But I don't suspect that that's what we're going to see from Donald Trump, especially not right now.
Well, let's try and look. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, that's it. I think he's going to go and make a fool of himself.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I wonder if the reason he's Perry skipping the second debate is so he won't make a fool of himself in the second debate, too. And also all the ammunition that I was going to say that the other candidates could toss at him. But honestly, I think one and a half of them may actually toss something at him, one being Chris Christie and the half maybe being Mike Pence. But still, these are the numbers. Let's go to graphic here, 9 here from Fox News, because this is the comparison from back in August of last month. When that first debate happened versus now. And the comparison is to see whether or not him skipping that debate had anything to do with his approval rating. That's what everyone else, or at least who they are looking for the primary for. And Donald Trump increased the amount of support he's got by 7% from 53% to 60%. As you can see, the rest of them, you know, DeSantis lost a few points. Vivek stayed around the same. The rest of them are still in the single digits, so who cares? But still, this is the last point about that. Is it such a good strategy to then skip all these debates because he'll just randomly go to another city or state and speak at a crowd to a crowd there and rile them up and have it feel like a tailgate session instead of actually going to talk about policies, agenda, things that he's looking forward to do in what he would hope to be his next administration, something outside of revenge and I'm going to get them back type of tour, because that's honestly all he's got going for him now. So he's switching up again, Jackson. But the thing is if you're advising him, I'm imagining that picture. You were advising Donald Trump.
You had to pay Matt. Well, it'd be another different lifetime, different universe. Me advising him at this point. But yes, what would I tell him right now?
Is he skipping these? It's a good idea to skip these debates.
Honestly, I think at this point it would be better for him to just not do any of the debates, because if he skips two and then goes back, it'll be like, well, why are you backtracking now? Just don't do it. I mean, you run by all these points and you're like literally like just destroying these people. So, you know, just stay on the path that you on. Why go back? You may look like you're freaking out for something. And he honestly may make himself look really bad. You know, he may say something really stupid or get caught up. And, you know, so I guess keep doing what you're doing. If I had to advise him, that would be, I'd pick a path and stay on it.
Well, I mean, the number actually shows it. Look, he increased by 7% again, Fox News polls, but that's probably the one that they care about the most, considering that's the constituents who watch that so much. But I'm glad you talked about saying something stupid, but then again, maybe it doesn't do much for him. Let's jump down to this next part about this. As Donald Trump and his campaign, they've been busy trying to avoid debates, also trying not to deal with classified document cases. But in the meantime, he's still saying and doing things that are pretty anti anyone. Except for himself. On Sunday night, he shared a post that stated, liberal Jews voted to destroy America. Because that's a good campaign slogan. Here's the text that he then put out just at the top there in red. It says, just a quick reminder for liberal Jews who voted to destroy America and Israel because you believed false narratives. Let's hope you learned from your mistake and make better choices moving forward. Happy New Year. So he lists a bunch of things in there. I'm gonna read the first two. It says, number one, Trump moves the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, which is Israel's true capital. No other president had the balls to do it. By the way, this is him again talking about whether or not he thinks he's this anti-Semite, which we've seen many things that he said, but he has no idea as he goes through these things. He's actually checking the boxes for what people accuse him of being. Number two was Trump recognizes Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights. Number three is Trump recognizes Israel's sovereignty over settlements in Judea and Samaria, right? So again, he's missing the point. There's a simplicity, Jackson, we talked about earlier when it came to whispering in his aide's ear and say, you didn't hear anything about those documents. But now he thinks that being supportive of Jewish folks is strictly the international relations with Israel and things that he's giving to folks that live in Jerusalem and Israel. That's not American Jewish folks that always have this connection to being, well, if you do stuff for that other country, that has nothing to do with, that has everything to do with us, and that's all we care about. There's things and policies that you put in place, and actually hatred and hate crimes that happen for American Jewish folks that he openly doesn't give a hot damn about. But somehow he thinks, in saying all this, how are you going to call me an anti-Semite? No. I think there's still plenty that have to have something to say about it. As a matter of fact, Graphic 12, Anti-Defamation League CEO Jonathan Greenblatt, he said this in response. Whether or not it's intentional, President Trump is playing into conspiracy theories about dual loyalty here. Even worse, this is happening on one of the holiest days of the Jewish calendar, Rosh Hashanah. Even as an organization that supported many of these policy decisions, ADL doesn't believe that our community needs to be lectured about how to vote. He's good at that. And I'm not sure if his if anybody's ever actually gonna tell him this ain't the way to go, bro. But I feel like even if he did, it's not gonna stick.
Right. I mean, even if they did tell him that, you know, it's not as if he would listen. And he's 77, so he should know these types of things now. There's a lot of things that Donald Trump just shouldn't do, given the fact that he's lived quite a long life. So, but he does them anyway. And, you know, you pointed it out perfectly when he put up there in the red, like, actually, this is what I did, so I can't be anti-Semite. Because when you read the text that he put down, the liberal Jews, like, it's just him being petty, like he's always is. Just him being petty and spiteful. You know, maybe there's some liberals who are Jews. So let me say this now. Oh, this is an opportunity for me to jump in because, you know, at the same time, a lot of the right wing base, they're pretty anti-Jewish. You know, they don't really like the Jews. So maybe I can throw that in there a little bit. Like, he always manages to sprinkle a little bit of support everywhere that he needs it while alienating everybody else, which is really one of his biggest challenges in growing the base that he needs. But I think that says more about Joe Biden for being so closely matched with a man like Donald Trump.
Well, this is the thing, right? You think he should focus at this point. You're leading the polls by this amount. He's assuming that he's gonna be the nominee, which I can see why he assumes that. This is usually when the pivot point happens. You try to go more mainstream, maybe try to appeal to more voters because you've already got your MAGA folks locked up.
He can't
do it. It's such a simple process. Everybody knows that's political. When you go through your primaries, you've now beat the field almost. We have a lot more to go, but he feels he's beaten the field already. Yeah. You start pivoting and go a little bit towards the left, slightly, or at least act like it, at least try and fool some people. Instead, it's, you know, I'm gonna go even harder to how much you guys should vote for me. So if you say that, you then expect folks that were not going to vote for you before, specifically Jewish folks or folks who don't want to see anti-Semitism spread throughout our country even further, to then go, oh, since he told me I'm so stupid for being against him, I think I'm for him now.
I mean, yeah, because again, at the end of the day, it's like what's on the forefront of his mind is, oh, no prison, please, no prison. Like he's literally, which is hilarious because he said, like, I wouldn't even consider pardoning myself, wouldn't even think about it. Yet he's trying to get an entire state, Georgia, to change its laws so that he, a singular individual, doesn't have to go to prison for something that he knows that he did. You know what I'm saying? So, like, that's it, even if he tries to go in the right direction, he's not gonna be able to. One, because that's on the forefront of his mind and he's just a human. And two, because he's stupid. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's just dumb. And there's only so much that you can do with that. You feel me? So yeah, it's just, and I mean, you can hear it in my voice. We talk about him all the time. It's just like, there's nothing left to search for. He's just an idiot, but here we are.
Maybe
here we
are. You said 77 years old, drop the 70. He acts like he's seven. Let's keep it in that thought process.
What's the Bible verse 77 and says something like that?
Oh, I don't know. Remember. You're the biblical scholar.
It was something to do with that. It matched, but I can't remember.
We'll find it. I'm sure everyone will find it. You guys let me know if you guys know which which Bible verse that we're talking about, which book and Bible
77
verse.
In 7 years, something like that. But it was something like that.
My parents would be very disappointed in me that I don't know what you're talking about as I grew up in the church. We'll take this break though, you guys. But when we get back though, more on the battles between some of the leaders of the Republican Party, this time Kevin McCarthy and Ron DeSantis. How does this go down? Kevin McCarthy's getting attacked. We know how this works. He's dealing with things that he didn't know he'd have to deal with somehow. We got that a lot more to go, but let's get to your thoughts in about a second. We'll see you. I'm reading May Money's. You know, I'm gonna read it now. May Money says, Jay Izzy and Mick Jackson and fine ass Jackson. What's Gucci, y'all? Sorry about your Rams this weekend. She's talking to me.
Yeah, they're your Rams now.
Yeah, they are only mine now.
No longer my Rams.
All I'm saying is the 49ers didn't look as good as they thought they'd look. I'm just saying. And she says, ring number 5 for the Dubs loading. We'll get you back. We have another chance at the 49ers. We'll beat them up in San Francisco. We'll make sure that happens. Let's go ahead and go to more stories. There's a lot happening. I only went to that one. Let's jump into Kevin McCarthy and them.
President Trump is stronger today than he was in 2016 or 2020. And there's a reason why. They saw the policies of what he was able to do with America, putting America first, making our economy stronger. We didn't have inflation. We didn't have these battles around the world. We didn't look weak around the world.
Well, it looks like Ron DeSantis is now trying to work with your colleagues who are pushing for a shutdown.
Yeah, but I don't think that would work anywhere. A shutdown would only give strength to the Democrats. I served with Ron DeSantis. He's not at the same level as President Trump by any shape or form. He would not have gotten elected without President Trump's endorsement.
Kevin McCarthy's finishing kissing Donald Trump's feet a little bit there and talking about his choice between Ron DeSantis and then President Trump. Well, by the way, I just want to address a couple of things, because he said Donald Trump's policies when he was president were so overwhelming, that's why everything was, those policies he listed was putting America first. What is that policy? What policy is putting America first? That's a statement. It's a odd promise. Making the economy stronger. What's the policy? And also, we looked weak around the world now. What policy, bro? What policy? They say things like, we have policy. Then they talk about slogans. These are not policies. By the way, I remember one Donald Trump standing next to one Vladimir Putin with his head down. And he said, everything that Vladimir Putin says about my intelligence agencies is right. My intelligence agencies lied on him. That is that looking strong around the world? Please. But still, she let him get away with that because it was on Fox News. Let's get to what he was talking about with Ron DeSantis, because that's actually the point of this whole thing. McCarthy then is mad about the fact that Ron DeSantis is potentially teaming up with many of his Republican opposition within the House to try and push this government shutdown for their demands. So of course, McCarthy was saying this about Trump versus DeSantis back in June though.
Could he win an election?
Can he win that election? Yeah, he can.
You think he can?
The question is he the strongest to win the election? I don't know that answer, but can anybody beat Biden? Yeah, anybody can beat Biden.
Well, he's kind of all over the place, but I guess he's testing the political winds, whichever it happens. But Ron DeSantis did respond originally to the original statements that we saw at the top here about teaming up and shutting down the government. DeSantis says, Kevin McCarthy says I'm a little different from Donald Trump. I agree. In Florida, we run budget surpluses. We paid down our debt. I've kept every one of my promises. Meanwhile, McCarthy and Trump worked together to add $7 trillion, more debt than our country racked up in its first 200 years, to the debt in just 4 years. It's understandable that the DC establishment doesn't want me to be president, and I wear that as a badge of honor. Pause, Ron. Were you wearing that as a badge of honor when you were in support of one Kevin McCarthy and one Donald Trump when you said, bigly, I'm a little Trump, as they were racking up that $7 trillion in debt? Were you supportive of it then? And why are you not for it now? Are you trying to separate yourself from the things that you were connected to then? Not necessarily with your agenda and your voting record, but you were definitely supportive of it. So what I heard from Ron DeSantis was Republicans add $7 trillion to the debt and do nothing about it, lie to you, and then say they're going to do a better job the next time. That's what I heard from Ron DeSantis. Who's working for the Democratic Party again? Let's give a little bit more, because he was also asked about McCarthy's comments, and he slammed the speaker in his struggle to get that speakership in the first place. Watch.
I think that if you look at what's happened with DC Republicans, they worked very closely. You know, look, Donald Trump, he supported Kevin McCarthy very strongly for speaker. I don't think he would have won the speaker vote. Donald Trump was instrumental in him earning that speaker's gavel. And they worked hand in glove, really, throughout his whole presidency. They were on the same team on every major spending bill that came down the pike. And they ended up together adding $7.8 trillion to our national debt. Never in a four-year period has that much been added.
Never in a four-year period has that much been added. Never in a four-year period has that much been added. So vote for Republicans again? This is, again, a legislator and the president that he's talking about, right? Why would we want anyone? Who's left? You? Who supported them? Still, here's the issue that's got McCarthy's rough hair. He's all, what's the term? He's ruffled, his feathers ruffled. Jesus, man. I don't know. Politico says this. This is what DeSantis has been up to. The Florida governor spent about 30 minutes on the phone Wednesday with conservative representative Chip Roy of Texas, Thomas Massie of Kentucky, and Bob Good of Virginia. leaders of the cadre that is pushing House Speaker McCarthy to embrace a shutdown if Democrats won't agree to hard right policy demands. Pause. They said they're going to embrace this shutdown if Democrats won't agree to their demands. But still, McCarthy says that'll be a benefit to Democrats. Democrats aren't looking for the shutdown. They are. More, his campaign spokesman confirmed it. They said Ron DeSantis knows that both parties, including the current and previous administration, are to blame for Washington's reckless spending spree. He's urging congressional Republicans to hold the line in this current spending standoff and end days of rubber stamping multi-trillion dollar spending bills that harm the American people. Jackson, they act like there's no other party on the other side. They act like there's not so many people in Congress that have been voted to do opposite of what is it they're claiming the American people want done, but still they'll say it that way and then still be the ones to shut down the government. And then when things get worse, they then blame that party.
Well, you know, the Republican Party continues to fight for the moral majority. You know what I'm saying? What is it, the silent moral majority? You know, the longer I'm involved in politics, the more, you know, you just, a lot of things you learn. But the Republican Party has been singing the same tune for over 40 years. Like, they have literally not done anything different at all for 40 years. And it's really not that hard for them to shift a little bit leftward. You don't even have to say that. You could just say, you know, maybe we should have a little bit more factory jobs here. Maybe we should enhance domestic manufacturing. Like, simple things like that that many a Republican would absolutely love. That kind of marked some of Donald Trump's first campaign when he won in 2016 in terms of who he spoke to. But I have to point it out. Somebody in the comments I saw said that Kevin McCarthy's too busy getting shaved 7 times a day to have to do anything or something, which was hilarious because he does look like he gets shaved constantly. But you know, what is a little bit different now, I guess, is the Republican Party isn't like completely homogenous, not just in being mostly white, but, you know, mostly just on the same path with how they move, what they vote on, everything that they agree upon. We have some dissent in the Republican Party now, which I guess maybe the Democrats could learn a bit from. You know, just in terms of, hey, I have the power to deny this and I want what I want. So, but at the end of the day, Kevin McCarthy is in a higher position. And if he had a spine and a backbone, he could, you know, just kind of whip everybody's little behind aside. But that's not who he is. And so that's not what he's going to do.
Well, his position of power came from concessions to folks that can then whoop him into submission. So
right.
It's happening.
What was it, 15 times that he lost or something?
I think it was
like
15.
That? Yeah, it was 15 times.
That should be repeated, because as it was happening, it was a big story. And then after it went down, I say a month after, we forgot the level of power this guy actually doesn't have as speaker. The position he was hoping for his entire life. And now he's like, damn.
And now he's just like, like, Eeyore just every day.
I was thinking that was a Mitch McConnell, because he definitely does that.
Yes, absolutely.
One more last point before we jump to this next story. You pointed out things that they could possibly do when they're talking about reinvesting in the country. Maybe some more manufacturing jobs, probably potential wage increases. Things that Americans need as far as their working and their also their economic standing, right? You know, those, the land of opportunity we like to talk about. Policies like that, initiatives, ideas, that would lead to something that McCarthy said, which was putting America first. What does it mean to put America first? Because every time someone suggests something to put America first, they go, why are you trying to give something to these freeloaders? Do they actually care about Americans? They don't give a damn about you. Republicans are very upset because there's some new rules in Congress, and it's a dress code policy. Instead of going higher, we've dropped down. Chuck Schumer said that they will allow senators to wear whatever they choose on the Senate floor. I'm actually a little excited about what it is that might happen. He goes, senators are able to choose what they wear on the Senate floor. I will continue to wear a suit, which I agree with. Go for it, Chuck. Now, these lax rules, they only apply to senators, but not the staff. So there's plenty of still professional looking people that'll be on the Senate floor or on the congressional floor anyway, though. So under that standard, men and women have been required to wear business attire on the Senate floor, which has meant coat and a tie for men. But senators fresh off of a plane or from the gym could circumvent the dress code by voting from the edge of the Senate floor with one foot still in the cloakroom. They could hold their thumb up or down to indicate their vote and then step back out of the chamber. So at least things are still happening. They're still able to vote like normal, and they can come in with, you know, some sweaty gym shorts on and stink up the place. and still vote up or down. I'm somewhere in the middle of this, but let's get some more details on this. So except for the Republican Party, who had no problem with their supporters breaking into things, of course, during the Capitol, they're upset about this. They're like, what's going to happen to the quorum of our institution? I mean, it's not like we had our supporters ready to kill folks chanting from outside, breaking windows and throwing things around, peeing and pooping on people's desks, whatever it is that they were doing. Here's Mike Lee pointed this out. He said, police, firefighters, judges, pilots, they all have uniforms. Ours is a suit and tie. We shouldn't abandon it because it's more comfortable to wear sweats. Hold for Mike Lee to potentially be wearing jeans one day. They're also turning their attention to one John Fetterman. He's an easy target. I mean, look at him. And Justin Amash pointed this out with that particular link to this story. And he said, awful. The Senate chamber isn't your home, a gym or an outdoor park. If you can't dress professionally for work on the floor of the Senate of the United States, then do us all a favor and get a different job. Okay, well, if you can't represent the American people, also get a different job, which, I mean, to give some credit to Justin Amash, he's no longer in Congress. But Fetterman did respond to some of the responses to his dress code, because we've been seeing it since he was running. And he responded to Marjorie Taylor Greene, who also said the Senate is no longer enforcing a dress code for senators to appease Fetterman is disgraceful. Dress code is one of the society's standards that set etiquette and respect for our institutions. Stop lowering the bar, because she's not lowering the bar. And Fetterman responded and said, thankfully, the nation's lower chamber lives by a higher code of conduct, displaying ding-a-ling pics in public hearings.
Right.
You guys don't know, Marge and a few other names. Marge specifically was holding up images of Hunter Biden and some of those explicit pictures of his body that were taken for whatever reason, and displayed those as some evidence to him showing his body. And then he responded to this video from DeSantis. Let's watch this.
Did you guys hear the US Senate just eliminated its dress code? Because you got this guy from Pennsylvania who's got a lot of problems. I mean, let's just be honest, like how he got elected. Well, I mean, he got elected because they didn't want the alternative, but he wears like sweatshirts and hoodies and shorts, and that's his thing. So he would campaign in that, which is your prerogative, right? I mean, if that's what you want to do. But to show up in the United States Senate with that, and not have the decency to put on proper attire, I think it's disrespectful to the body. And I think the fact that the Senate changed the rules to accommodate that, I think speaks very poorly to how they consider that.
Anything that's a change is offensive, which, by the way, Jackson Fetterman responded and said, I dress, in response to DeSantis here, I dress like he campaigns. I guess disrespectfully, messy. And sweatpants. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess, you just kind of wing it. You know what I'm saying? That's what Ron DeSantis does. But speaking of Ron DeSantis, he said what he said about Fetterman wearing the types of clothes he wears. Ron DeSantis tells little 7-year-old children to watch their sugar intake. He had the little kid, he had the little snow cone. He was like, what's that? And he was like, a snow cone. He was like, it's probably a lot of sugar in that, right? And then he just turned away and went the other way. And then, just in general, I mean, it's not as if the Senate really is busy. It's not as if they really do anything. It's like every time you look up, it's like, oh, we're about to be on recess for a month. And then nothing ever passes in the Senate because it's designed that way pretty much, especially through the corruption. The Supreme Court relatively recently in the last several years has taken many actions that have allowed more corruption within the political process in this country. At the end of the day, what difference does it really make?
That's the thing. So are we okay with, by the way, like I said, I'm mixed on it, because I can see the purpose for being in professional attire, because that's just our society. But if our society decides to start changing along those lines, we can change with it. I mean, there was a point when I'm sure suits in the form that we wear it weren't the norm, but at some point it went to that. When our founding fathers were wearing white wigs and tight ass pants, I mean, I'm sure there was times when we switched it and they were like, how dare you? I'm gonna wear my wig.
Don't lawyers still wear wigs in Britain?
I don't know.
Am I tripping? I think somebody in some of the courts do. But I was just in regards to that though. I mean, I think generally speaking, most people will still dress formally. Right. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, yeah, sure, people might come to work. I mean, these are senators, like you said. The rest of the staff, they have a formal dress code, but most of them will still dress up nicely, just because it's not even just because it's tradition. It's also just kind of goes along with the position. Right. You know, so sure, you'll have a couple more people who don't do that more and more, but you know,
what's it gonna do? Let's think about it. What's it gonna do? Yeah. Let's take this next break, you guys. A few of your comments, maybe you guys can answer two of the questions Jackson had. First was that Bible verse that neither one of us can figure out, but also just now, what was it you last you just said? Because I wanted to make sure people, you'd forgotten one part of what it had happened. I don't know, it was somewhat the dress code. But
I don't remember.
Yeah, it was just not, because I was like, I want to remember what it is so I can get that answer, because you guys always have the answers. Either way, we'll get to your comments. We got more happening afterwards, though, because there is this potential shutdown that is happening with the government, as we mentioned, Ron DeSantis working with folks on. And actually, there's more infighting amongst Republicans about how to handle this. It happens, it feels like, every 2 years. The government shutdown, the government shutdown, the government shutdown. We're fighting over it. They're fighting over it more. We're going to get to details of who the, I guess, conscious people are versus the crazies. We'll do all that a lot more, but here's your thoughts in a second. Let's jump down to the next one here. Let's go.
Speaker McCarthy is putting his own political survival ahead of the good of the country. There are the votes to fund the military. There are the votes to fund the government. The reason I know that is that in the springtime, Speaker McCarthy and President Biden shook hands on a deal that a supermajority of Congress voted for. That this is not a math problem, this is a political problem. And until Speaker McCarthy decides that he wants to govern for the United States and not for the MAGA caucus, we're going to continue to have these problems.
Well, there's some fighting words, actually some facts behind it, because we hear about this government shutdown battle and whether or not we can spend this on that. As Representative Achincloss pointed out there, money's always there. We just decide to give it to certain folks and act like we're out of it. But still, the battle's happening politically when it comes to this government shutdown, potential for it in the spending battle. The Senate is largely united behind its own spending package, by the way, as Kevin McCarthy in the House is trying to figure this whole thing out with the folks that are fighting with him. So the Senate has it together, and they've already begun the process to pass this legislation with the support of leaders of both parties. So the Senate budget adheres to the $1.59 trillion budget McCarthy and Biden agreed to, that representative was talking about in June, in negotiating a deal to suspend the debt ceiling. But hard right detractors in the House want the cuts to revert spending to fiscal year 22 levels, in line with what McCarthy agreed to in order to win the speaker's race in January. So McCarthy's stuck between what he agreed to from two different folks, and now he doesn't know what to do about it. On September 17th, Republicans in the House Freedom Caucus and the Main Street Caucus announced that they had reached an agreement on a short-term continuing resolution that would keep the government funded for 30 days so they can waste more time. So according to the bill text, the legislation would continue funding for the 12 appropriation bills until October 31st. While including an across-the-board 7.8% cut to discretionary funding, and it includes a number of provisions aimed at strengthening the border, which has been a point of contention, of course, as we always hear about. So still, this is where the fights start next, Jackson, because although the Senate isn't gonna, looks like they're on their own board for their approach to it, so it won't really go that far anyway, the fighting amongst Republicans in the House is opening up. Here's some back and forth between Byron Donalds, who's on the side of letting things move on, against people like Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene. Matt Gaetz said the problem with Donald's continuing resolution is that it gets the job done for Jack Smith. So just throw the name Jack Smith out there and everyone will be against it because it's a boogeyman. Byron responded, Matt, tell the people the truth. The DOJ will operate whether the government is shut down or not. Special counsels have always exempted themselves from shutdowns. What's your plan to get the votes to defund Jack Smith? You'll need more than tweets and hot takes. He also went after Marjorie Taylor Greene, as I point out. And she said, your CR funds Section C and Section K of Public Law 117-328. Here's what the law says. It funds Ukraine in multiple sections, including two funds with no specified dollar amount that leaves the spending up to Biden. Again, new boogeyman. Biden's gonna get all your money and do whatever he wants with it. She says billions more could end up being sent to Ukraine with your CR. Byron responded, actually, you're wrong. The provision is to train our troops so they can train our allies. It's been the law since 2013. It was in the NDAA, which you voted for this year. Side note, Jackson, as I get your thoughts, Apparently, Donald's bill does not include additional Ukraine aid or disaster relief money sought by the Biden administration. Because we know they're not giving the Biden administration much of anything they want. They're not giving them all this cash. Your thoughts here on this little fight?
Well, you know, it's the Republican Party has, you know, even outside of just their infighting, they've been against, you know, making it accessible for baby formula. They were against helping the baby formula shortage. They were against infrastructure. They've been against absolutely everything. And it's not just the Biden administration and the Obama administration and anything pressing forward onto that time of a black man became president. They lost their damn minds. Ever since that happened, they've just been going absolutely insane. But in terms of like what Matt Gaetz is doing, I think that, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword for him in his career. Because on the one hand, he's sticking up for what his base and what the further right elements want to see. But at the same time, if the government does shut down, a lot of people are going to be out of work until it opens back up. So he can easily become the face of the reason why it shut down. Even more so than Marjorie Taylor Greene. I mean, you know, because her brand is what it is now. Yeah. But, you know, I think that it's kind of interesting just to look at the Republican Party trying to become moderate again, or what we would consider moderate Republicans, but there's too many Lauren Boberts, MTGs, Matt Gaetzes. That element is too strong in the party now. So, you know.
And Kevin McCarthy, and looking for that 16th vote that finally got him the speaker's gavel.
Right.
He had to concede to those, that faction, the MAGA faction of the House of Representatives, and now they've got him by the dog collar. And every time it affected him to then push for the impeachment inquiry, which of course could also make Republicans look bad. And then this, but they do it every time, every cycle. It's the same thing. Yo, we got to shut down the government because these Democrats are overspending. And then we look up, and I'm glad this time Ron DeSantis, as we pointed out earlier, pointed out how much spending actually happens, wasted spending actually happens under Republicans, because Democrats say it all the time. And the easy boogeyman is to say, but he's a Democrat, and then a bunch of Republicans, and then and say, well, yeah, that's what he must be lying, because I don't have to look at actual facts. If someone presents facts and I don't like them, they're no longer facts. Good. Now we're dealing with this. The government is not going to shut down. If it does, it's going to be a disaster. But if it's, I don't believe it will. And we'll see which political person folds first, because now we got a standoff with a bunch of idiots. Let's get one more story before we get out of here for this hour, you guys. Because again, in talking about Republicans, Donald Trump, and everything else when it comes to his legal issues, there's more consequences from denying elections that we all have to deal with. Let's go here.
Without election denialism, without lies about election fraud and a rigged election, without the lies suggesting that Donald Trump actually won that election, there would not have been an insurrection. So election denialism, even though 2020 is over, we have 2024 already just right in front of us, and an expansion rather than a retraction of election denialism, at least in some quarters. So I think the narrative there is we need to worry about, because that narrative provides the justification for people to engage in acts of political violence.
Sometimes it just needs to be said directly, because this is the most obvious 2+2 ends I've ever seen. That's national security analyst Mary McCord, and she's talking about the fact that we've now inserted election denialism as a normal part of our election systems after just this one cycle with Donald Trump losing in 2020, as he built up into that. Because as we saw in California, what's our guy in California who was denying, he said he lost the election before he even did it when he was running in that special runoff against
Elders, Larry Elders?
Yeah, Larry Elder. Even in that, like from Donald Trump's one idea to everyone else that's the lemmings behind him, they'll repeat the same thing over and over and over again. So here we still have it now ingested within our entire system. This is what she's talking about, and this is how bad it could be. 23 election deniers in 17 states as either governor, attorney general, or secretary of state, according to a new report released this week by the US Democracy Center, a nonpartisan organization that advocates for fair elections. That means a third of the country has an election denier in statewide office overseeing their elections. 17 states, and there's 23 election deniers within that are in positions of power, and they're trying to get even more. So according to the group, three election deniers are running for president: Trump, DeSantis, and Larry Elder, as I was pointing out there, but you may forget that Larry Elder's running for president, because they don't let him on the debate stage. And other hopefuls are also backing up or have said something in response or in support of Trump's denials before. So really quick, that graphic there, if you can really tell from the middle of the country to the south, that's where the majority of them are. And of course, you can see in the upper middle up there as well too. We know those states and how they operate. So these are some of the actions that they've taken to try and take this over and destroy the country. Based on misinformation spread by far-right conspiracy theorists, that's what it's based on. 9 Republican-controlled states have withdrawn from the Electronic Registration Information Center. It's an interstate partnership that helps make sure voter rolls are accurate by comparing voter registration data among states. And in Wisconsin, Republicans in the state Senate voted on Thursday to oust the nonpartisan administrator of the state's Elections Commission, Megan Wolf. That's in a bid to give election deniers and conspiracy theorists more control over how our elections are run in Wisconsin. Let's go down to Texas. The Republican-controlled legislature there voted in May to abolish the position of election administrator and give the Republican-appointed Secretary of State the power to take over election operations exclusively in Houston's Harris County, the most populous blue county in the state. I think it's pretty clear what the situation is. And as they keep talking about how if we give these Democrats their power, all they are is power hungry. They want to take things over and then they want to recreate America in their own image. And they hate us as they're setting up literal overtaking of our election systems in multiple states, putting people in place that are talking about things that have been adjudicated, have been disproven in courts multiple times. So we'll be facing even more of these and more people thinking, well, it can't be a lie anymore because half the country is lying. That's what we're looking at now, Jackson.
And you know, really what we're looking at more concretely is just the Republican Party doing this because it has to. You know, unless they shift gears and start to move towards more of what's popular in terms of what the general public wants in terms of healthcare and education and anything along those lines, they have to do this. They have to paint a picture of a different reality. The reversal of Roe v. Wade, they didn't need any data to know that that was going to be unpopular other than to see that it was popular when it was in place. You know, they see all the polls of how unhappy people are, what happened in Kansas, Ohio. But still, you know, these lawmakers mostly are like, no, we have to do these 6-week bans. You know, because they're so behind Donald Trump as well, you know, they can't really deviate from it. So that combined with they're incredibly unpopular policies that nobody really wants, including like, you know, you poll regular people on gun rights. They're like, no, we can't do that. They have to do this. Otherwise, they have to do what's popular.
They definitely monitor what is that is popular among voters versus what is popular among the folks who give them money. You talked about the gun lobby. They give them tons of money. They have to support who it is that gets them and keeps them in office. So there's a line where you have to start lying about what it is that American people need, want, and policies that are actually popular. And to distract people from actually voting on many of those policies, it then goes to talking about gay folks, migrants, anyone else that they can hate. They need more boogeymen. That's, again, we've been talking about it this whole hour. They're complaining more about the dress code lowering on the congressional floor, then they're talking about the fact that people that weren't in suits and ties were all over the congressional floor with zip ties, chanting how they're going to kill congressmen and stuff like that. That's not offensive to them. Last I checked, the guy that was sitting in Nancy Pelosi's office wasn't wearing a suit and tie, so I think he's lowered the standard of our Capitol. Just the way they think. Someone else that's lowered the standard of everything in America is Rudy Giuliani, and This is just fun. NBC pointed out that Rudy Giuliani is being sued by his former lawyers. They claimed he owes them $1.4 million in unpaid legal fees. Sounds a lot like Donald Trump, who owes apparently Rudy Giuliani probably millions of dollars in unpaid legal fees. That's why Giuliani went to Mar-a-Lago a couple years back and begged with hat in hand. He goes, please, bro, please, I gotta sell my $6 million apartment in Manhattan if I don't get any money from you for what you owe me. And you know, Donald Trump paid him in hand gestures. Right. Get out of here, man. Get out of here. So he owes money too. I think it's his most Trump-like thing he could do. Let's take this hour, the top of the hour break, you guys. We're going to come back with our members only part about the show after this for the last 30 minutes, the aftermath on the damage report, you guys. But everyone else, if you'd like to join us there, please sign up. Give us some love there, and we'll see you on the back end for a few more stories. We'll loosen up a little bit, have some more fun with serious stuff. See you in a second.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.